So ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the 90s podcast, an aviation podcast. That's the beginning of season number 2. And today's episode special guest is Vincent Jello Aiello. He's a former US Navy F-18 and F-16 fighter pilot. He's right now flying for a major airline in the US, and he's as well the host of the Fighter Pilot podcast. We had him on the show during the first season, and the goal today is to know how he did navigate from the COVID situation, so a couple of years ago, something like 3 years ago, to now. So Vincent, thank you very much for joining me on the show.
You are welcome, Matteo. It's good to see you again and talk with you.
Yeah, great. So it's been 3 years now. I think we recorded the first episode 3 years ago in the at the very beginning of the COVID situation. And yeah, it was kind of a crazy time. Can you recall us, remind us what aircraft type you were flying at that moment, what base you were at, and what kind of company you were flying for?
Yes. As you said earlier, one of the major U.S. airlines, and I was a Los Angeles-based 757 and 767 first officer, and I was flying up through steadily February and early March of 2020, and then all of a sudden everything changed.
Yeah, that's right. It was a kind of crazy situation for everybody. Everything slowed down, especially the airline traffic. How did that impact you, first of all, your company at that moment and the flight in the US back in those days?
It was, I think, unlike anything my generation has seen. I suppose some of those who survived the 9/11 airline times, and I guess there were some bankruptcies and deregulation and other things. It's always something the longtime folks tell me. About every 10 years, something comes along and tips everything upside down. But for me, it was unlike anything I'd seen in my few years at the airline at that point. Right before COVID, every flight seemed to be full. And then I had a flight in late March, a rotation, I should say. And I ended up taking pictures at LAX, New York, John F. Kennedy, and San Francisco. And they were all just desolate. I mean, nobody around, no traffic, nobody inside, and airplanes were mostly empty. And when I finished the trip, my wife said, you know, this was again, right, COVID. So we didn't know if the world was really falling apart or just seemed like it. But she said, well, don't come home. Go stay somewhere for a couple of days and make sure you're okay before you come home. So I was able to stay at my late father's house in Los Angeles for a few days to make sure I didn't have a temperature or anything. And then finally she let me in the door.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. So everything stopped in the US. I mean, the traffic completely stopped.
Well, so they didn't like shut down the airlines. They just made it so, I don't know if it was the FAA or who, but it was just, everything was scary, right? Nobody knew what was really happening. They knew there were a lot of deaths. They knew that the virus was very transmissible and contagious. And so there was a lot of uncertainty. And then when that happens, and oh, by the way, major events were canceled, sporting events, concert venues, you know, people that had weddings, all of a sudden they had to cancel all that. So everything just grind to a halt. So really no one hardly needed to go anywhere. I remember maybe a trip after that, I flew to Hawaii, and I think we had 7 or 8 people on the airplane. Mm-hmm. And it must have just been either people needing to get somewhere because of the virus or just who knows what. But I asked myself, how is this even profitable? And I think a lot of the airlines at that point were looking at what they could do. And so as we can talk about, if you'd like, my particular airline started looking at, hey, how can we start parking airplanes and buying out some of the senior pilots to try to cut our losses? Because there's a lot of expense and you count on people flying to keep the revenue over the expense, but all of a sudden there was still a lot of expense, but very little revenue.
Yeah, trying not to dig too much deep in the cash amounts they had at that moment, because it was, cash in the airline industry is vital. If you have a lot of cash, that's great for the company, but if you begin to run out of cash, begin running out of cash, it's a complete nightmare. So this happens from March onwards to something like October, November, or even the early of 2021. Then things slowly bounced back. Was it the case for you in the US?
It was, but I'll tell you, there's a little more excitement for my personal story in that I can share with you. So through the summer, I continued to fly, but mostly empty airplanes. And the company, again, they offered an incentive to buy out the most senior, which is also the most expensive for them as a business, pilots. And so about 2,000 pilots did elect to retire early with a somewhat handsome severance package. And the rest of us, they said, all right, well, we're going to try not to furlough anyone, but we do need to figure this out. And so for where I was a few years with the company, they made me UNA, as they call it, unassigned. And so from about the fall of 20 through the spring of 21, I originally was just sort of put on the bench. And then all of a sudden they decided, and I live in San Diego, California, Mateo, which is, imagine a rectangle in the bottom left corner if the rectangle is longest left to right, like the United States. Mm-hmm. Well, they said to me, hey, we want to rebase you in New York, which is the opposite farthest corner. And we want to put you on the smallest airplane, which also comes with the least amount of pay. And so I, to be honest, considered quitting because I just thought that's untenable. And in the end, I took a 3-month leave of absence. And during those 3 months from January to March, things picked up, as you intimated earlier, pretty quick. And so when I came back in March, I was reinstated back to Los Angeles, back on my original airplane without ever having to transfer to a new airplane or bases. So that was a blessing for me.
It was great at the time for you to be able to bounce back that quickly, only 3 months of leave of absence. It's amazing. Yeah. So from the early of 2021 to now, did you have any change of aircraft type? Did you switch from the right seat to the famous left seat? And being based in the southwest of the US in California?
So I did the no to the first question and yes to the second question. So I was able to go back to training because at that point, I think they sent me to training in late May or early June of 21. I had not flown since the following fall. So spent about a week in training and I was flying and doing great. And then I had always a request. I'd cleared most of my requests of where I'd like to fly and what airplane and all that. But I kept one on there that said, hey, if I can fly the same airplane in the same base, but in the left seat, I'd like to do that. And in the fall, let's see, when was it? It must have been August of 22. So about a year after I was reinstated, I was selected to become a captain. And in January of 23, I went to my training. So I did not have to change bases or airplanes. I just moved from the right seat to the left. And I found at that point that I actually enjoyed the job a bit more. And I liked sort of being in charge. I hope it's not an ego thing, but always as a first officer, you're having to cater to however the captain wants to run the operation. But once you're the captain, then you can run it. And of course, it's always within the regulations of your company and the FAA and everything. But just, you know, the way you set the tone for the flight, I found I liked being captain.
Yeah, that's 100% normal coming from a former fighter pilot. You always want to be in charge. I think it's in our DNA. And I think it's best when you are on the left seat. I am unfortunately not on the left seat right now. I'm flying from the right seat. But yeah, it's better for us to be in charge. And I think we've been selected to be in charge and to try to, you know, lead things from the beginning for us. So yeah, it's tickling somehow. How was the training to become a captain for you?
It was not difficult. One of the first instructors I had said the most profound thing that really set my brain in the right vector, if you will. And he said, the airline pays you to fly the airplane when you're a first officer, but when you're a captain, they pay you to manage the airplane. And I thought that was such a great summary for coming in and yeah, okay, fine. Now I have to fly the yoke with my left hand and the throttles with my right. That only took a couple flights and I got comfortable with that pretty quickly. But really thinking about, okay, we have an emergency. So now I need to let the first officer fly, even if it was my leg. And now I'm going to talk to the air traffic control and to the company and to the flight attendants. And so really just managing the situation, being decisive, all those things we learn in crew coordination, assertiveness, communication, decisiveness, et cetera, et cetera. And just really managing the airplane, not flying it. I thought that was the best instruction that I was given. And it really did make it easier for me to grasp what my role was in learning to be a captain.
Yeah, especially when you are able to see that, I think from a good eye view, trying to take a few steps back and being able to analyze the situation. And that's a great thing to to be able to do that. Now let's talk about the the current situation in the US. I'm sure it's not a surprise for you. There is a hiring booming right now in the US, and with a lot of things happening, the salaries that are great for you guys south of the border. So that's amazing. Why do you think this is happening? Why do you think right now the hiring is still booming, and we can talk about the kind of pilot shortage right now?
Right. Well, so you're asking why do I think it is, and this is just my uninformed opinion, but it strikes me, without having ever worked in the management of airlines, that it is by default somewhat of a reactive enterprise. Right. So when 9/11 happened, it was hard to plan on 9/12, let's say, hey, this is what we're going to do. You're somewhat limited by who wants to fly, who's scared, what does this mean to the company, what new regulation could there be, and what's security going to do, and now people aren't making it through before they get to the airplane. So it seems to me like we're always reacting, and typically, right, we all try to be proactive in our personal and family lives and whatever else. And that's just, I feel like, very difficult. And so unlike 9/11, and I was in the military during 9/11, not in the airline, but from those I've talked to, they said on 9/12 and beyond, people were afraid to fly. And of course, in that regard, the terrorist strike had its desired effect because it struck fear in people. And so the flying took a while to come back. I think with COVID, it was different, and people were very much inclined to fly. And of course, society by then had changed, and I don't want to get into what people believed, or, you know, hysteria, et cetera, all the different, you know, alleges and allegations, I should say, that came out of COVID, and who was telling the truth and who was just trying to scare people and keep them down. But I feel like there was a lot of pent up flying. And so while it's very easy in my airline's case to offer a buyout and send a trained pilot to his rocking chair, it's not so easy to turn that the other direction. And so within a week, theoretically, someone can go from being a highly paid captain to being retired. But to do the opposite, even just to the first officer's point of view, is several months. And so being reactive, and then suddenly with the resurgence of demand to fly, I think the airlines just said, well, hey, we got to train as fast as we can, realizing it takes months. So let's keep people coming in the door and trying to staff these aircraft, that now we're, you know, they're trying to sell the tickets. If there's a demand, they want to sell the ticket. And then they try to figure out how to get the aircraft, how to get the pilots and crew to do it. And so, it just seems to me that right now, with the economy doing the way it is, and people now trying to make up for those sporting events and concerts and weddings, that people want to fly. And so with that demand comes the desire from the airline's point of view to accommodate all of them. And so to do that, you need pilots because, oh, by the way, there are also crew, as you know, Mateo, there are crew day limitations, crew less limitations. And so still two pilots. And so that just means you need a lot of people. And so they're hiring pretty quickly.
Yeah, you're 100% correct on regarding the inertia of the hiring of the airlines. Yesterday I recorded an episode with a colleague of mine that is he was hired by Air France a couple of months ago, and so he underwent the training program, so the simulators, the A320 simulators, but you know, to from switching to the simulators to beginning the real line flights, you have to do the line dock. And for the line dock phase, he has to wait for a couple of months because they are lacking of trainers. It's always this inertia that is a bit problematic for the airlines, and especially right now.
Yeah. Well, and again, it's just a interesting world we live in right now. People trying to come back to work. Some people, I think, maybe not just in the airline industry, but everywhere, deciding, hey, wait, that was kind of nice to get paid to not work. And so, and there are still some people, I'm sure you see it too, Mateo, that are just still afraid. But maybe, to be fair, they have some sort of compromised health system, but I still see people outside with masks on. And I hate to admit it, I'm quick to cast judgment, but I don't know their story, so I should probably be a little more understanding. But it strikes me that there are still people that are fearful of whether it's COVID or just the world situation. And then, of course, it doesn't help that every time you turn around and look at the news, I just saw it this morning, oh, a new strain of COVID for the holidays. And it's, you know, the cynical might say, well, of course, they want to keep everybody afraid and not flying or whatever the case might be. But yeah, it's an interesting situation.
Yeah, that's right. 100%. So yeah, coming back on the previous question, is there still a pilot shortage in the US right now? Do you see a lot of aircraft grounded due to this pilot shortage?
Well, I'm the wrong person to ask about that. I hear that there is a pilot shortage, but in my capacity, I'm not directly involved in the numbers that we have or the numbers that we need. At my company, I'm told we're getting close to 17,000 pilots, which is the most we've ever had. They're hiring over 200 per month. And I know we're not the only major US airline doing that. There is another. So it sounds like there is. It certainly sounds like they're trying to get as many people in the door as they can. But that's just anecdotal on my part. I'm not directly involved in neither the storage of aircraft nor the number of pilots versus how many we wish we had.
That's a great time to begin to fly, I think, and to begin the flight training in the US and in Canada too, because right now I'm flying in Canada and it's booming. The industry is booming. All the major airlines are hiring right now. And I think it's an amazing time to begin your aviation career.
Yeah. Are you, so side question, people can't see us, they're just hearing us, but as we look at each other through video, we both are wearing beards, and I'll tell you why I am in a moment. But at your airline in Canada, are you allowed to wear a beard? Because I don't know why they don't let us down here.
Yeah, you know what? They are allowing us to wear beards, but it's in a certain of, you don't have to increase a certain length of hair. So yeah, that's kind of crazy. You know what? It's a good question you ask me because when I was in the French Navy, because after your show, I don't know if you recall that, but you asked me one of the questions, what aircraft would like to fly? And I wanted to fly the Rafale, the Navy Rafale. And after the COVID hit, I had the opportunity to come back to the military and to fly the Rafale for the French Navy. It was great.
Oh, wow.
And I was not allowed to wear any beard. And a couple of weeks after I left the French Navy, they allowed the guys to wear beards. So I was kind of pissed off. But anyway, yeah.
It grows back.
Yeah, it grows back. Exactly. And I think yours is, it's the same for you guys. You're not allowed to wear that in the, being an active military member, especially flying fast jet, right?
That's correct. And I think there were some COVID deployments in the US Navy where they relaxed that because they couldn't pull into port anyway. So I've heard some stories from folks that were out there. But no, in our airlines in the US, I don't know if they blame it on the theoretically you should have to put on your oxygen mask and have a good seal. But I always say, well, hold on. People in Canada and Europe seem to be able to wear a beard. So I don't know why they won't let us do so here in the States. So that's my personal crusade. But I'm wearing a beard right now, Matteo, because I've been, I don't know if you want to get into this or not, but I've actually not flown since the end of August 2023. And you and I are recording this in the middle of December 23.
Yeah. Do you want to expand a little bit more? Why do you don't fly or no?
Yeah, no, I'm happy to. So I was flying along. So, well, actually, let me go back. So when I was in the Navy, I had had a situation, with my health, when I was 39 years old that caused me some consternation at the time. And I ended up being okay. And I ended up going back to flying in the Navy. And before I left the Navy, I went to an aeromedical examiner and I said, hey, I have this history. Will I be able to get a class one medical to possibly be an airline pilot? And he says, yeah, I think so. No problem. Let's send it in. And we sent it in and the FAA sent back like, yeah, you're fine. Just make sure you get this checked every year. Okay, great. Well, so then I had that. I got hired. Then I separated from the Navy and received my VA disability. But my next medical, I just kept putting, yep, no changes since last time. Well, so Matteo, 6 years go by. And finally, the FAA says, hey, wait a minute. We notice you're receiving money for these issues that you have listed on your VA disability. We'd like to know about those. I said, oh, okay. So I went in for my physical and I wrote everything that I have my medical disability with the VA, even some things that are listed, but there's 0%. So for example, you know, that ringing in your ear, right? To tinnitus, that's like an automatic 10%. At least it used to be. I think they might be changing that. But I had some shoulder pain was 10% and neck pain was 10% and a few other things. Well, I ended up with 70% total, which is great because you get a little bit of money. Mm-hmm. And in my case, I like it because I can get a cheaper fishing license every year. And so they said, hold on, we don't know about all this. You didn't put this on your medical. I said, oh, that's true, because it happened after my first one. And I just kept saying no changes since last time. So I did a new physical. I sent it in. So that was in July of 23. My medical expired at the end of August. Finally, in the beginning of September, I received a letter back saying, hey, we would like to know more about this issue. So I've been working with an agency that helps our pilot union. And ever since then, we've been trying to get all the data and submit it to the FAA. We finally did the last Monday, or maybe second to last Monday of November, right before Thanksgiving here in the States. And they have it. And now I'm just still sitting around waiting. So without a medical, I've been unable to perform my duties since. So I've been, dare I say, enjoying the time off because thanks to union protections, I'm still getting paid. But, I don't have any obligations. So I grew a beard and went fishing and worked on my podcast and spent time with the family. But at this point, I'd like to know. So I'm hopeful to get an answer one way or the other, because if they say no, well, okay, fine. Then I transition to disability and find yet a third career. And if they say yes, then I need to go back to training just like I did after COVID.
Yeah, that's a bit crazy because, you know, medicine time is not the less than human. It's not the same than human time. I mean, as soon as you put things into the hands of doctors, especially in aeronautics, you have to wait 6 months, 1 year, and it becomes, I mean, endless. I have a friend of mine that had kind of a serious situation too. And, I mean, he still has not his medical and he has been waiting for something like 2 years. So yeah, it can be very long, but hopefully you have a good union. Are you ALPA guys?
Yes.
Yes, you're ALPA. Yeah, that's a great union, for us too. We are ALPA in North Canada. All the major companies in Canada are ALPA. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a great union too. So, you were talking about your podcast. So now you have a little bit of time to make it run. So are you still running the podcast? I think I was interviewed on your podcast on episode 85 for the Mirage 2000. Did you change something on the podcast from the last time? I know that for sure that you have an amazing team, by you, helping you to grow the podcast and it looks very great.
Yeah, well, thank you. So we launched in January of 2018, and by the end of by the end of 2022, I just had sort of grown, not weary, but just, okay, I got to change something just for the fun of it. And I happened to meet a local videographer who says, hey, I think you should do more video. Because prior to that, I had a YouTube channel, but all I did was put up the episode artwork and then just a bouncing sound bar. And that was the YouTube video for the episode. And we'd get a couple thousand, maybe, listens that way. And so he said, well, why don't we go Joe Rogan style? And if you're familiar, he's a big podcaster here in the U.S.
Yeah. I love Joe Rogan.
So we got a studio, we got a table, put a couple chairs across from each other, and we did that effective the beginning of 2023. And I found that it scratched the itch of doing something different, but it created new challenges in so much as recording remotely like I did with you is one thing, but getting you to come to San Diego is another. But also just, I don't know about you, it takes a while to get used to the sound of your own voice. And that is, by the way, a medically proven issue for most people. Well, I'd just gotten used to that, and then suddenly I had to get used to what I looked like. So that was a challenge too. But the biggest challenge, Mateo, is I guess I maybe naively expected the YouTube channel would really grow quickly and create a lot of revenue to at least cover the expenses. And the truth is, it did not grow as quickly as I hoped. And each video still, a year later, is we spend more making it than we earn on YouTube for ad revenue. But it also provides the content that I need on my audio. So we take the audio from the video and we still release that. And so we have some advertising that way. But the biggest thing is it still keeps our Patreon supporters very stocked, if you will, with videos and audio and their ability to ask questions before the interview. So it's even if it's losing a little money on YouTube, I think we're making it up elsewhere. And so the show is doing that. And now I'm trying to decide what to do different, if anything, for 2024 and what the future will have. So yeah, every day is a different challenge, it seems like.
Yeah, still an amazing show. So the Fighter Pilot Podcast, for those who don't know, I'm pretty sure everybody knows about it. But yeah, that's an amazing show and amazing content, especially regarding the fighter pilot world. That's an amazing show. Thank you. Thank you very much, Jello, for joining me on the podcast. It was a real pleasure having you. Thanks for your time. Appreciate it. I know that you have a busy schedule, even if you don't fly lots nowadays, but I'm sure you will in a few months without any problem.
I hope so, Matteo. You're welcome. And thank you for having me on. It's always a pleasure to share the airwaves with like-minded professionals.
Thanks. And thanks as well to the listeners of the 9Gs podcast and Aviation podcast. If you do like the show, please post a review five star on the Apple podcast app or whatever platform you use. And if you don't like the show, just write an email and I will try to answer you as soon as possible. Thanks a lot and until next time.